from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattada! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman here talking Syracuse basketball. There was a big football game going on this weekend, but for all intents and purposes, Ben and I are simply done with Syracuse football for the year. We'll give you our thoughts on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. But besides that, there's not too much that we can really break down regarding Syracuse and Notre Dame tomorrow. It is what it is. Notre Dame comes in as 30-plus point favorites, and it's going to be one of those games where maybe Syracuse can stay close for a little bit, but I think everyone is on the same page that when it's all said and done after 60 minutes, Notre Dame will end up on top and will be prepared for that inevitable rematch with Clemson coming up lingering in the future. But Syracuse basketball has had two different games. That Bryant game, definitely a wake-up call, but a couple of other concerns regarding, you know, the team's preparation coming off of the Jim Boeheim COVID quarantine and bubble that they had to create and sit out for their practices. And then Niagara yesterday showed a very different team, a team that seemed like they had a lot more figured out offensively and a lot more on the defensive side looked all right as well. And inevitably, the Orange get a 75-45 victory over Niagara. Ben, there were a lot of talking points from this game, and we've got, you know, the privilege today to talk to the play-by-play from that game, Ben Shulman, making his WAER basketball debut yesterday. So we've got the inside the Carrier Dome look at this. What were some of your big takeaways from that game?
Well, you know, I'm gonna toot the Canadian horn as I hope to all season. As Cooper Boardman says in our intro, Quincy Guerrier, hello, 23 points, career high, 13 rebounds, led the team. He only played 25 minutes. Quince was unstoppable yesterday. This is, I think, the best anyone's seen him play at the collegiate level. And it just shows at the four position, especially against a smaller team like Niagara. But I think in general, he can dominate other forwards with his mix of size and speed. He was all over the glass and just put himself in position for lots of easy layups, whether it was in transition or half-court offense. He was great.
I think no one really knew what to expect from him this year. We had those hints that he was going to really explode a little bit, and everyone thought he was going to do that off the bench. Some mix-up stuff. He gets the start against Bryant. He gets the start again against Niagara, and he looked absolutely incredible. No one could get in his way. The efficiency was phenomenal. 9 of 10 field goals. Didn't really have to take a tough shot. Just finished, got his rebounds, did his thing. And the cool thing about it, as you mentioned, is he did it in 26 minutes. And also, as you kind of look through this entire line and box score with the key players for Syracuse, no one really got into foul trouble yesterday. They were really, really solid in terms of playing solid defense without picking up cheap fouls, knick-knack fouls. They played a really strong defensive game without picking up personal fouls. And Quincy was a concern last year in terms of his fouls. And he plays 26 minutes, goes for 23-13, and only picks up one foul. That's exactly what you want to see out of him. And I don't know if you guys were scrolling Twitter, but I let loose a theory that could become a little bit of an increase in concern for Syracuse. If Quincy picks this up and keeps this pace up, is he playing for Syracuse next season. I'm not sure, because he looked like a brand new player coming out onto the floor this game, and he showed his hints against Bryant, but this was definitely the Quincy coming out party, and I think there is a lot more where that came from in the future.
First, to talk about fouls, it was such a problem for Syracuse last year, front court fouls. And really, you said it, the whole roster did a great job staying out of foul trouble. Gil and I were remarking, Gil Gross, who did the game with me yesterday, that Syracuse didn't have a sub for majority of the first half. And that's because it took them about 15 minutes to foul anyone. If no one's fouling, then you may as well keep all the starters in, and that's what they did. And then, Owen, I think your fears are spot on. I've always thought that with his measurables, there was a chance Quincy Guerrier could get looks from the next level. I don't want to overreact to Niagara. The Purple Eagles were on 3 days of practice. It is a MAC opponent, no offense to the Metro Atlantic, but Quincy has the tools to excite NBA prospects. If the injury was really what was holding him back from performances like this, he could definitely get looks at the next level. It only takes decent flashes. I mean, the guy who got drafted fourth overall, Patrick Williams, this year didn't even average 10 points a game. If you have the measurables and flashes of professional caliber talent, you can be looking at a pro career very soon. And I think Quincy could be looking at a pro career after this year, although we're very, very early in the season.
Quincy, not the only storyline yesterday. Obviously, Buddy Boeheim sits out because of contact tracing, will in theory be out for a couple of more games, a couple of other players out due to contact tracing in theory because of what Jim Boeheim, I believe, referred to as a walk-on testing positive here. And it really mixes things up, and it gave Kadari Richmond a chance to get his first start in Orange. He plays 35 minutes and has one of the best stat lines I've seen from a Syracuse freshman in some time. 16 points, 7 boards, 6 assists, 4 steals, and 3 blocks. He has really stirred the pot in terms of this conversation. You're seeing rumblings of it on Twitter. When Buddy comes back, should Joe be a sixth man or a seventh man coming off the bench and Richmond retain this starting spot? It's a conversation that it's got a lot of, some pizzazz that can build up with it. It's a warranted question. Where do you kind of sit on this balance right now? Where do you see this thing falling when Boeheim comes back and you've got the three guard system once again?
I'm not ready to yank the job away from Joe just yet. I think he's had a slow start to the year. We all know that. There's no way around it. He needs to make more shots. He was 2-for-14 in the first game, 3-for-11 in this past game against Niagara. And that's just not good enough. Joe Girard is an offense-first point guard. What I will say, and what I even believed before this game, was that I think Kadari Richmond should be ending games for Syracuse. More impressive to me than his 16 points were what you mentioned, the just overall all-aroundness, if that's a term, of his stat line. You know, the 4 steals and 3 blocks, he was a huge presence on the defensive end where he looked lost in the zone in the first game. He looked very comfortable in this second game, and he just brings a lot more length. I mean, this is what Jim Boeheim wants. He wants a 6'5" point guard that can step into the passing lanes and create offense out of steals rather than Girard, who's more creating it with his own shot and half-court opportunities. SU was great in transition, and Richmond's a big reason why. I think he should be ending games, and I wouldn't be surprised by the conference schedule or maybe by the midway point of the season if Kadari was starting. He was great yesterday. There's no way around it. He was really solid in all facets, setting up his teammates. He wasn't the only solid freshman, but he helped out the other big story of the game, which was Woody Newton, who came off the bench, and I thought was very impressive on both sides of the ball in his 15 minutes as well.
I want to go back to in terms of Richmond closing games, and I think that it's not necessarily an every game thing. I think Richmond is the option to close out the game if you're trailing down the stretch. I think that defensive opportunity, that defensive prowess that he has can create some opportunities for Syracuse. As you saw, he was a constant threat in passing lanes yesterday, and I think that's something that they can really build off of. But when you look at Buddy Boeheim and Joe Girard in terms of simply free throw shooting, I think if Syracuse has a lead, you're going to want those two on the court just because of the incredible percentages that they've shot from the foul line in their Syracuse careers. So I think if you're trailing, Richmond's the guy because he's going to create way more opportunities on the defensive side for you than you can get out of Buddy or you can get out of Joe. But on the offensive side of things, when you're winning games, I do think you have to stick with Gerard. You've got to stick with Boeheim because they can give you that consistency from the charity stripe. But it's an interesting conversation in terms of Richmond and Gerard and Boeheim because coming in, we weren't really sure the balance of minutes at the guard spot. You know, you assume that Boeheim and Gerard are going to get their 35 minutes apiece and maybe Richmond plays for 10. But this has definitely stirred the pot a lot because I think you're going to continue to see your 30-plus minutes from Boeheim. But I think you could see a pretty even split in terms of 20 to 25 minutes from both Gerard and Richmond, and that kind of varying by game, varying by the hot hand, because Joe Gerard will not shoot this cold for the entire season. But Kadari Richmond will not play this well for the entire season either, in theory. So you're going to mix and match and play those minutes as they work out. I'm really excited for Syracuse to have that opportunity to build off of one of these guys and be able to use them both and not have to rely on two guards playing 35 to 40 minutes game in and game out. It's something that they can really build off of and something that I think is going to be one of their most valuable assets if this team and when this team gets back to full strength.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation. The only point I disagree with you with on closing games is I think if Syracuse is down close to double digits, you know, if it's an 8 to 12 point lead, maybe then I do want Joe in rather than Kadari because I think Joe can just heat up in a flash. Like, that's
true.
The thing. He's a streaky shooter. So when he's bad, which he hasn't been great these first two games, it looks bad. He misses a lot of deep shots. But there were times last year where Joe scored 7, 8, 10 points in a row for the Orange. But Kadari, you're right. If it's a tight game, I want Kadari in there because he's going to do a better job at keeping it close, much more stable on the defensive end, and made a lot out of a little yesterday. 16 points on 10 shot attempts. That's pretty good. Gerard needs a lot of shots to get where he's going. He's a volume shooter, and 8 points yesterday on 11 shot attempts for Joe. It's just not going to cut it if he wants to keep the starting job.
And how about that? I mean, Kadari Richmond, a Syracuse guard getting to the rim with some speed, some energy. That is not something that they've really been able to do for so long and something that they really haven't been able to rely on. And I know it's only a couple of years back, but since Battle left, Battle was really the last one that could actually get to the rim. And yes, it's only, you know, 2 years since you last saw Battle, but that's in going an entire season without having a guard that can really get to the rack when you're not in a fast break situation is a very difficult thing. So Richmond being able to get to the rim is really valuable. And I think there's another balance, and this is something that Jim talked about in his presser yesterday after the game a little bit. You've got to worry about the basketball shape of Kadari Richmond, that jump from the high school scene, that AAU scene, wherever you're playing before you get to college ball, that scene to the college scene is a significant jump, regardless of the level you're playing at before you get to Syracuse. He is not necessarily in D1 ACC basketball shape off the jump. He played 35 minutes yesterday, looked all right, but I think that definitely there could catch up to him, and it's going to even itself out once again. I kind of talked about it a second ago. When you've got Joe, a volume shooter, as you said, Ben, a guy that's just in a rut right now and needs to get those shots up. Syracuse has had 3 practices in the last 20 days. No wonder a volume shooter like Gerard, if he's a little bit cold, is not going to get out of that slump very quickly. It's very different and a very difficult time to be able to just get to the gym. You can't necessarily just show up at Manly or the Mello Center and shoot whenever you want nowadays. It's got to be much more regimented and scheduled. So it's going to be difficult for him to just sort of get out of that rut that he's in. And I don't know how long it'll take, but Richmond has proven that they're going to be able to balance these minutes. And it's something that I'm eager to see going forward as you kind of continue to build on a lot of question marks surrounding this team. And the next matchup it's only a day away. We're a little more than 24 hours away from Ryder tomorrow at 7 p.m. And Ben caught up with Kyle Franco from the Trentonian a little bit earlier today to discuss this Ryder matchup and a little bit more on what they have to offer.
I have the pleasure today of being joined by Kyle Franco who covers college basketball for the Trentonian, and among the teams he covers is Rider, Syracuse's opponent on Saturday. Kyle, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, Ben.
So it's an interesting year for everyone. It's a particularly interesting basketball season for Rider, though. Obviously, there's lots of off-court issues that many teams are working through. But on the court, Rider's returning a very small portion of last year's roster. Only 12.4% of scoring from last season comes over to this season. What happened that caused such a mass exodus from this year to last in terms of players from the program?
Well, you hit on that. Only 12.4% of the scoring coming back. Actually, Kentucky is the only team in the country that lost more scoring off its team. But basically what you had is you just had an older team last year with Rider. You had four seniors, and then you had two redshirt juniors as well. So you graduated four kids, and then you had two redshirt juniors who grad transferred out. So Demencio Vaughn is now at Ole Miss, their leading scorer from last year, and Frederick Scott is at Boston College. And so you had a group there where you had four guys who were all 1,000-point scorers on the same team, and they scored all 1,000 of those points at the same school. So it wasn't as though you had one guy who scored half his points at another school and then came into Rider. They all did it at Rider. So that was kind of a unique thing that you really don't see anymore in college basketball. So you sort of just had this situation where all these guys had either graduated or they had the opportunity to grad transfer and move on. And what you're left with is a team that has 12 new players on it this year, only returning four players, and only one of those four players started a game last season.
I want to get to Christian Ings, that one starter, in a moment. But first, let's talk about the 12 new guys. Okay. How do you think the needs of the program have been addressed, and maybe which one or two excite you the most?
Well, I think the two guys you'll definitely see on Saturday night are going to be Rodney Henderson and Dwight Murray. Those are both Division I transfers that are coming in and eligible right away. Henderson is a grad transfer from Cal State Northridge. And Murray is a transfer who got a waiver from Incarnate Word. They both have Division I experience. Henderson's a guy who can really score the ball. He's kind of an old-fashioned shooting guard type. He moves well without the ball. He catch and shoot off the screens, one dribble pull-ups. So he's going to be the guy, I think, that will take a lot of the shots for Rider. He'll be their leading scorer this year. And then Murray is another guard who's going to bring some toughness to them. He played a lot of minutes at Incarnate Word, which is in the Southland Conference. Coach Kevin Baggett kind of likened him to some past players who are really just guys who, you know, they bring their hard hat. They get in there, they'll do the dirty work. They really compete. And that's really what this team needs, is it needs a little bit of toughness. So I think guys like Murray and Henderson will help bring that.
Rider last season led the MAC in rebounds per game at 38.3. The tallest player on their roster right now, though, is 6'10". Do you think they can maintain that prowess on the boards, even if they don't have a ton of height across the roster?
Well, that's kind of where their bread has been buttered the last few years. If you look at the numbers, they have really battered teams in the paint. And that's either by driving the ball to the basket, going inside to a post player who can score, or by offensive rebounding. And they've done that obviously against MAC level competition. When you play a team like Syracuse, that's not necessarily as easy when you have guys, Syracuse, who are 6'10", 6'9", 6'8", super and super athletic and super bouncy. But that's definitely something to watch this year, because Rider has definitely gone to the boards hard. I think they'll continue to do that in the Metro Atlantic Conference. Might be tougher on Saturday night against Syracuse.
Yeah, the Orange in their game on Thursday versus Niagara did pretty well in the paint. They were able to score 40 points in the paint and out-rebound the Purple Eagles by 20. And that brings me to a little comparison here. SU's played one MAC team in Niagara. Obviously, there are a lot of questions still with so many new players. How do you feel that Rider might stack up to Niagara?
Well, right, they split last year. So they split the two meets, and they were actually about going to play in the quarterfinals of the MAC tournament before that was canceled. And again, it's hard to say because Rider's roster is so different. Rider did blow them out in the game in Lawrenceville. In the game last year that was at Niagara, Niagara won on a buzzer beating shot. The one thing about Niagara, though, is it's a team that's really small. Like when I saw Niagara in person last year, it looked like the size of a Division III team. But they shoot a lot of threes, and that's how they try and stay in games. This is not a Rider team that necessarily is going to shoot as many threes as you saw as Niagara did on Thursday night. You know, three-point shooting has kind of been an issue for Kevin Baggett coach teams. They're not necessarily the most consistent from the outside. But the thing is, when you play against a 2-3 zone that Syracuse is going to throw at you, you've got to be able to knock down outside shots. And I thought both Bryant did a better job than Niagara, obviously. But I thought both Bryant and Niagara had opportunities to make shots against the Syracuse zone. And that's really going to be the key is can Ryder make enough outside shots to at least stay competitive and kind of give itself a chance to be in the game in the second half?
Yeah, Ryder shot eighth best in the conference, 32% from deep last year. But I agree with you. Bryant did hit a lot of threes. And I thought in that Niagara game, the Purple Eagles just missed a lot of open looks. There were definitely opportunities there. It's something that the 2-3 zone almost willingly invites. And if the Bronx can take advantage of it, then this might be a pretty close game. You mentioned Christian Ings earlier. I want to get back to him. So he's the only returning player that started. He started in over half the games that he played in last year, 18 starts, 30 appearances, but it tailed off more near the end of the year. He wasn't starting, and he wasn't getting as many minutes as he was at the beginning half of the year. What does he need to do to, A, stay in the starting rotation and thrive for the Bronx this season?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of you hit that freshman wall at the end of the season. You know, one of the things that was unique about his situation is that he came into a team that had four seniors and two redshirt juniors who were already, you know, pretty well established. So he was kind of just, and what he was told to do by the coaching staff was, you know, you're just along for the ride here. You try and soak up everything you can. And then, you know, obviously you're going to be a big part of our program going forward. And I thought Chris had some nice moments last year before he, you know, he certainly could jump out of the gym. He had a big highlight reel dunk. I'm sure you could find it if you Google Christian Ings dunk versus Niagara. He went up and threw one down with one hand that was all over the, you know, the Sports Center top 10. But I think the key for Christian is he's got to be more consistent of an outside shooter. You know, and then the other thing is that he's got to be a leader. Like he's a guy they need to sort of lead both vocally and by example. And I think he's ready to do that. And Kevin Baggett talked a little bit about this to me in the preseason. So Chris went to Newman Goretti in Philadelphia, which is a big time powerhouse in the Philadelphia Catholic League. And he was a year behind a player named Quade Green, who committed to Kentucky and has then since transferred out to Washington. But it was a similar situation in that it was kind of like Green was the star guy and it was his show. And Chris was kind of the supporting cast. And then after Green graduated, all of a sudden Chris was the guy. And that's kind of how it is at Ryder this year too. Like Chris is the guy. He's the guy who's got to make them go this season. He's the guy who's going to, you know, dictate the pace of the game. And they're counting on him for a lot. And I think he is ready to step up and take that on.
Another returner who played in every game, didn't start, but did appear in every game, was Ajiri Ogamunu-Johnson. And I sincerely apologize if I mispronounced.
No, you got that. You got it.
All right. Awesome. How do you see him factoring into the rotation this year?
Yeah, we just go by Ajiri here when we talk to him. But yeah, he's another guy who's out of that Philadelphia Catholic League. He played at Monsignor Bonner. So Ryder's got a lot of talent from those, you know, that league. One thing that's interesting is I think they're going to try him as kind of a more of a stretch four than as a center. He's largely been used as a backup center through his first 2 years to come in, spell the starter, give them some energy defensively, you know, rebound the basketball. But from what the reports are sort of coming out of practice is that he's got the ability to step outside and knock down some jump shots. Now, he has not done that yet in his career in terms of them sort of taking the reins off and letting him shoot outside shots. But it sounds like to me that he may be a little bit of a stretch four, and they may sort of give him the opportunity to see if he can knock down some shots this year to start. If he's able to do that, that obviously lets them, you know, put somebody else into the center position, whether that's Tyrell Bladen, who's a redshirt sophomore, who's one of the four returners, or a guy like Lawrence Foreman, who's a big freshman center that they brought in. So that's definitely something to watch as we look at how Ryder tries to set up its rotations.
That'll be an interesting matchup versus Syracuse, because SU's starting four right now, especially with their with the regular center Barama Sidibe injured, is Quincy Guerrier, whose dimensions are very similar to Ajiri's. Guerrier's 6'7", around 220 pounds. Ajiri is 6'8", around 210. And Guerrier just torched Niagara, 23-13 in the last game. So if they can get a body on him that's of equal size, Guerrier could be neutralized a little bit by the Bronx. And I want to push now towards that matchup specifically. It's Ryder's first game of the season, lots of new players. What are your expectations for the Bronx coming into game one?
That's a great question. I'm not sure I have an answer. And the funny thing about that is I'm not sure Coach Kevin Baggett knows either. I think a lot of what he wants to see and what you're looking for tonight is you just want to see them compete, right? So you want to see Ryder get out there, get up and down the floor. You just see how these guys look together, like on offense. Are they fluid on offense? Do they understand where they're supposed to be on offense? You know, where the ball is supposed to go. And then defensively, you know, do they understand what their defensive rotations are? Are they guarding the right guys? And then it's just the effort, right? You just want to see them go out there and see them play hard and get an opportunity to stretch their legs, because they've been sitting around for the last week, kind of watching everybody else get a chance to play games around them. So I think there's some anxiousness there as well, because if you remember, Ryder also had a 2-week pause in mid-November for COVID. So they kind of got going with about 3 weeks of practice and then a 2-week pause. And then they come back, they had to cancel the first three games that they were supposed to play. So now you're kind of in that situation. And look, a lot of teams are in this situation as well. So you have Saturday, they'll play St. John's on Tuesday, and then they go from there into their first two league games. So it's a thing where I think you want to get out. You want to make sure you get two games under your belt here, just to kind of let guys stretch their legs, see what it looks like, see what you want your rotations to be before you go into a league game.
So if Ryder is going to pull the stun here, upset the Orange, or at least keep it close, what do the Bronx need to do in this game?
Well, they're going to have to make shots from beyond the three-point line. So that's number one. Number two, they're going to have to find a way to kind of slow down Guerrier. And I think Dolezal is the guy that's really going to give Ryder problems. They don't have anybody who can match up with him. He's 6'10". You know, he can knock down shots. He can put it on the floor. He's a really good passer. That's the guy I don't think Ryder is going to be able to match up with. I think Dolezal could have a really big game. What could maybe happen for Ryder? Maybe Syracuse is a little bit tired. It's their third game but it's their second one in 3 days. They've only got 10 players, right? If five guys are going to be sitting out because of COVID and then the contact tracing, and then you're down another starter because of injury, you know, maybe that helps Ryder a little bit, but this is going to be a tough game for Ryder to win. And to be honest with you, I don't think the result really matters for Ryder tonight or on Saturday night. I think it's more about getting out on the floor, getting to go through this in a competitive game where you're not playing against yourself. Because remember, they didn't have any scrimmages. They didn't have any exhibition games. So I think that's what's most important tonight for Ryder. Look, if you happen to be in the game late and it's competitive, even better. But at the end of the day, I don't think a win or a loss really matters that much.
All right. Now I want to give you two questions, not necessarily Syracuse Ryder related. In your Twitter bio, and you can check out Kyle at KJ_Franco, you say you're pickup basketball all defense. So I want to know, who do you model your pickup game after? If you have an NBA comparison.
TJ McConnell.
TJ McConnell, I like
TJ McConnell is the GOAT. He is my idol. He is an idol for all undersized, underskilled, scrappy white dudes everywhere. And of course, growing up in suburban Philadelphia, I was a big Sixers fan. Allen Iverson, obviously, huge, huge Allen Iverson fan as a kid. I remember watching the 01 finals and, that great moment where he hits the shot in overtime and steps over Tyronn Lue, and Tom McGinnis on the radio broadcast is screaming, he's way too good. One of my great childhood memories. And then I watched a lot of process games for the Sixers, a lot of bad basketball. And TJ McConnell was one of the guys who survived the process and was a contributor to some playoff teams. But yeah, I model myself after TJ McConnell.
Well, you might not be happy to hear, considering you're a Sixers fan. I'm from Toronto, so one of my favorite memories might be one of your least favorite memories. But before we get into that, I'll transition us away from NBA basketball. Second non-SU Rider-related question. If everything becomes normal again, and maybe it will, and we find our way over to Rider's neck of the woods, what's a great food spot in that area that me and my co-host Owen should check out?
Oh, man. I always say Nassau Street in Princeton is always a good is always a good spot if you can if you can deal with the traffic and getting through Princeton at rush hour. But yeah, if you can head over to Nassau Street, any of those places on over there in Princeton are nice. If you want to swing out into Hamilton Township, you can find Killarney's or Rossi's. Rossi's is the famous Rossi Burger. Used to be in Trenton. They kind of moved out to the suburbs in Hamilton. But those are the places I would definitely recommend.
All right. Well, hopefully one day I will be able to go check them out and try that famous Rossi Burger. Kyle Franco from the Trentonian. You can check him out at KJ Franco on Twitter or check out his articles at the Trentonian. Just Google it. Thank you for coming on, Kyle. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it, Ben. Anytime.
One more thank you to Kyle Franco from the Trentonian. He talked a little bit about Marek Dolezal and sort of the nightmare of a matchup situation that is for Ryder. And it kind of brings us into the last major talking point we wanted to hit on today. And that's the big situation with Barama Sidibe undergoing surgery earlier this week, out for 3 to 4 weeks. It's got Dolezal playing the five, which is not necessarily a bad thing for Syracuse, but we've been looking into, you know, what can Marek do in terms of playing the five and where could those reserve minutes come from if they even try to go from it. And you've seen glimpses, but we're still so up in the air about all of these young centers and where they might stand and fit into this team. We'll start with Dolezal, though. He's played two different games, and I think that's something that kind of translates to what I expected from him this season, what I think we kind of agree on. He's going to be a guy that sort of does what he needs to do on that given day. You don't need him to score every game. You don't need him to be the facilitator every game. You don't need him to grab 15 rebounds every game, but he's going to do exactly what you need him to do game in and game out. You saw against Bryant, they needed points. Getting him the ball at the top of the paint was a really, really solid option for the Orange, and he scores 20 points. That's exactly what you needed. Yesterday's a different story. He didn't need to score. There was some concern, and I saw some people criticizing Dolezal on Twitter after the game. What did you want him to do? They won by 30 points. Quincy is having a heyday out there. What are you trying to mess with? Let him go. Let him do his thing. And Dolezal did exactly what he needed. He crashed the boards yesterday and was a valuable option in terms of just doing those, getting those intangible numbers, which is why we grew to love him as a player. I think it's going to be fun to see how he is able to develop and step up in those different situations. But he's just a guy that, because of his skill set, his versatility, he's going to do what you need on any given day, and he's going to do it well. And that's something that you can really, really look forward to moving forward and see him develop as such an interesting, and you almost want to call him like a forward or a small forward, almost combo guard type thing, because he puts the ball on the floor. He can get to the hoop. He's a little bit athletic. He spins. He's got a nice little spin getting up to the hoop. He's got everything going for him. I'm so interested to see where he goes and how he is able to approach these games, especially as you progress into stiffer competition and more quality bigs going up against him.
Yeah, anyone disappointed in his output, I'll just let them know right now. If Marek Dolezal is this team's leading scorer or close to it, that's bad. Like, that's not his role. Scored 7 points yesterday, grabbed 10 rebounds. That's exactly what Syracuse needs him to do. The point numbers, he'll take the open shots. That's all he needs to do. He's got, you know, the spin move that he loves to go to in the paint, and he went to it once yesterday. But the funny thing is, if you had told me Barama Sidibe had 7 points and 10 rebounds in a game, I'd say, that's good. That's good. That's what you want out of Barama Sidibe. So if Dolezal is filling in for him and that's what he gets, shouldn't that be good too? He's out of position playing the center, and he did what the center needed to do. It's it was all matchup based yesterday, really. And like you said, against Bryant, Syracuse needed him to step out, hit a few jumpers, control the play from the top of the key. But that wasn't the case yesterday. Kenari Richmond was doing the great job facilitating, as were a couple other guys like Alan Griffin. So Dolezal almost kind of got out of the way of Quincy. I mean, if Marek's going to have a legit forward slash center on him and Quincy had a size matchup like he does yesterday, then Marek's staying out of the paint is the best thing for Syracuse, because it allowed Quincy to really dominate his man down low. I think he's done a great job so far in the two games, and I expect him to continue to do a great job because he hasn't shown us that he can't play center for Syracuse. So I think Marek should continue to play big minutes at center. I don't think he should be a scoring option. If it's there, he'll take it. But forcing the ball into Marek will cause problems for Syracuse. He's good at many things. He's not great at a lot of things, which is kind of his whole shtick. Like he can do a lot of everything. One-on-one scoring is not Marek Dolezal's thing. That's not what he should be doing. So giving him, 10, 12 post touches a game, that's not worth it.
Completely agree. I think you can utilize him in certain spots, sort of like you saw against Bryant, where you can get him the ball at the high post and let him make that option, which I think is something that they will definitely return to and continue to use moving forward. But one of the big things that was a strong positive for Syracuse yesterday is Dolezal played 31 minutes, zero personal fouls. That is something that he struggled with last year, was consistently in foul trouble, fouled out of a good number of games last season. So him staying out of foul trouble is a really, really solid thing. But what we're still up in the air about is, say he does get into foul trouble, what are you doing next? And I've heard ideas that, with the way Quincy's playing, just throw Quincy at the five and let him do that and play this sort of, almost five combo guards and a point guard style lineup. And that's something that they could definitely go with, but we've seen slight glimpses of all of the young centers, and no one's really jumped out to fruition. You wanted to see someone sort of figure things out. Jesse Edwards looks like he hasn't really made any changes from last season, although it is a very small sample size. 1 minute yesterday, 1 minute against Bryant, didn't show anything in those 2 minutes of play. You saw a little bit more out of Anselm, but he also didn't really give you too much in terms of what he can do. And yesterday we got our first glimpse of John Bull, which is always fun. Came out in the headband. I'm a sucker for a Syracuse basketball player in a headband. It gives me the CJ Fair vibes, and that is all I can ask for out of Syracuse players, is to bring me back to the glory days with CJ Fair and that damn headband, because it is my favorite thing ever. He brought it out. I was ready for him to explode, and he was not necessarily ready for the explosion. Picks up three fouls in 9 minutes. Sort of looked like he was just running around out there, and I know that was not necessarily telling of his skill, but he just kind of was moving around, didn't really get too open, didn't really get too close to getting a rebound or two. We got one in 9 minutes. So, it's not the worst, but he didn't necessarily look like he understood the role that he needed to fill, which is all you're really looking for out of one of these young centers, is someone who understands the role, can come in there, get the rebounds when they're coming towards them, put back occasionally. You're not necessarily looking, as we've discussed in the past, for one of these centers to come in, you feed him the ball in the post, he puts on a great post move and scores. That's not what you're looking for. You're looking for someone to hold their own defensively and to get the rebounds when they're in the area. That's all you really need out of this backup center who's coming in for 5, maybe 10 minutes a game, maybe less than 5 minutes a game. It's something that you're really only looking for some minutes here and there, some role minutes here and there. You don't need them to be a great scoring option, but no one out of the three options we've looked at really seems like they've developed the role, and they simply don't seem like they get what they need to do.
So while I'm not totally disagreeing with you, but I do think I need to pick out of these three options here. And I don't know, this might surprise you. I kind of liked John Bolajak's game yesterday. I wasn't
okay.
Bolajak. And here's what I'll say. So Jesse Edwards, he's only played 1 minute in two games. But in my mind, he just needs to bulk up. He doesn't have the strength right now to survive down there. He's probably the most offensively talented. Like, when you watch him in warm-up, he's the one who's hitting the deepest shots. But that would be great if he was 6'5". Unfortunately, he's he's up to about 7 feet. They need him to build a little muscle so he can push some guys around and get rebounds. Frank Anselm, I think, is the best athlete of the three, but he's looked really uncomfortable to me so far. And it's understandable. He's a guy who reclassified and committed late, and now he's a freshman coming into the weirdest offseason in college basketball history. He just hasn't had a lot of time to learn on either side of the ball where to play. And I think it was a little weird yesterday when he and John Bolajac were in the game, because they were kind of both standing on the blocks, and no one's played that style in 20 years. So unless you're the New Orleans Pelicans with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. So it's, to me, slightly by process of elimination, I think Bolajac is a little bit of a mix. I think he's stronger than Edwards. He was more physical in his 9 minutes, sometimes in a bad way. Those three fouls are definitely a downside. You can't pick up a team high three fouls in 9 minutes. But he's physical, and of the three, to me, he looked the most comfortable. He only grabbed one rebound, I will say, but there were some good screens. I thought that he was productive off the ball. So look, I'm not just waving a flag around right now for John Bolajac, but if you said Marek Dolezal has three fouls in the first half, you got to bring in one of the centers, and you're not doing it with Quincy, who are you going to bring in? If I'm Jim Boeheim, I would pull Bolajac off the bench right now. I feel the most confident that he can do what he needs to do. None of them are going to really score a ton of points, if any, right now. They just need someone to get in there, rebound the ball a little bit, set some screens on offense, and if someone passes you the ball above the rim to finish. As you said, no one's pulling a post move. It's strictly above the rim finishing for these three guys right now. And I just think out of the three, I have the most confidence in John Bolajac.
I will say this, Ben. I might actually agree with you, despite me sort of bashing him a second ago. The one thing that really stood out to me, and I'm going to preface this by saying that I never make these statements saying that the other guys aren't trying, because you never actually see someone come in and not try. Everyone is trying, and I understand that, but it looked like John Bull was the only one of the three that really went in and tried to make something of these minutes, which is something that I think you can really build off of. The other two kind of came in, and it just sort of seemed like they wanted to fly under the radar in that let's not do anything too drastically to mess things up mentality, whereas John Bull came in and was like, hey, let's try and do something, which is a completely different mentality. You can't want to not fail. You've got to want to succeed. And that was the difference. John Bull went in there wanting to succeed, and he didn't have that instant success. And you can't simply say, I want to do something and do it immediately. That's what we all learned, you know, with Thomas the Train or something like that. There was a train engine that I think I can, whatever it is. You thinking you can doesn't necessarily get it to you immediately, but it puts you in a much better situation than going in there and saying, hey, I just don't want to mess up, or I want the next guy to be able to do it. I have an old baseball coach, and he said, you know, when you get up to bat in these late game situations, there are two different approaches. The guy who just wants to get on first any way possible, like, oh, maybe if I just take a few pitches, I can get a walk and let the next guy do it. And the guy that wants to win the game right then and there with a home run, do something on his own. That was the difference. John Bull went in there and wanted to hit a home run, and it didn't work. Sometimes you strike out. It happens. Frank came in, and Jesse came in, and they were looking for a walk with the game on the line. And you don't need a walk. Go out there and try and swing for the fences. And I think that's where you can see your success out of John Bull. If he comes in and he plays a little bit more relaxed, I think he came in with a little too much giddy energy, maybe a little too much excitement. It's fine. It happens. If he can come in, compose himself a little bit more, but play with that same mentality that he's going to do something and he is going to be the one to make that big play, maybe get that big putback dunk, something along those lines, he's going to be the option. And it's as simple as that. Jim Boeheim says he's not going to play someone that's not ready to be played. And it looks like right now he doesn't think Jesse Edwards is ready to be played. And it doesn't really look like Frank's ready to be played. Him putting in John Bull yesterday says that there's something that they've seen. And I'm sure it's that effort that I want to do this and I want to succeed that is the difference. And it's going to result in him getting more minutes, I think. And it's a great point from you. It's a process of elimination thing, but he is the best option right now.
Yeah, the three fouls, the negative he had, was also a byproduct of him just being the most aggressive. Not always in the right way, but he was who I thought was the most aggressive guy under the basket. And you said he got 9 minutes. Frank got 4, Jesse got 1. So there seemed to be at least some curiosity here from Jim Boeheim to see what he could do, letting him go on for that long. And I think this is what makes it really important in the Rider game on Saturday to get up big. Syracuse, you know, it's easier said than done. We see a 1-point win and then we see a 30-point win and we expect that the Orange can just replicate a 30-point win. You never know. But Syracuse should be able to mount a pretty large lead against Rider in its first game of the season for a multitude of reasons. And when you get that big lead, that's when the Orange can put in John Bolajac and Frank and Jesse, and they can try out Braswell Moore and Woody Newton and stuff like that and give guys run, because the Quincy idea at center, you know, we're a long way from you mentioning that, but that's all well when Niagara's biggest player is 6'8", 6'9". You know, the ACC's got legit athletic 7-footers. It's not going to be great to have Quincy Guerrier going up against some of those guys, even if it's in 5-6 minute stints. You need to find someone who has 6'10 plus height that can play just a few minutes at center in the case of foul trouble or fatigue.
Completely agree, Ben. And when you alluded to it, I mean, you've got to get up. You've got to be able to figure these issues out. As we've mentioned, as Jim has mentioned, as we've seen, this is not a team that's been able to practice with all too much frequency. 3 practices in the last 20 days. Obviously, you would assume they have some sort of light practice today and move on a little bit, getting ready for tomorrow, just some simple prep for tomorrow. But it's one of those spots, because this is your last chance to figure things out. You've got Rutgers on Tuesday. Rutgers is not a blowaway team. They're an easy team to look at typically. But this is a good Rutgers team. This is a very, very capable Rutgers team that will come out and will play solid basketball. It's a good team. That's going to be your first true, like, this is the chance. This is where you see what you're actually made of. Is this a team that can actually compete? Is this a team that can't actually compete? And it's something that you've got to figure out tomorrow. And it's something that you will sort of see. There are a lot of questions. And another question that we haven't really figured out, and I don't know if anyone's figured it out, including Jim Boeheim, where does Woody Newton fit into this? Because you saw that after that first game, and coming into the season, I was definitely in that I don't know where his minutes come from situation. Now he's in that position now where, you know, Sidibe's hurt. Dolezal's playing the 5, and you've got 2 forwards playing at all times with Griffin and with Quincy out there. So you've got twice the chances, 3 times the chances now to be able to get in, because you were assuming that Quincy or Alan Griffin were coming off the bench. They're not, which means that your 6th man at forward, your first guy off the bench at forward, is either Bobby Braswell or Woody Newton. And Bobby Braswell has not shot the ball well. He has not shown what we expect. And that could be, you know, a similar thing, a rhythm thing. You can attribute all that. But Woody Newton came in last night and showed that he's an option. And he's a guy that you can actually turn to and say, go in the game. And he can figure some things out and put some points on the board and give Syracuse a strong option in a situation where he wasn't necessarily even supposed to play too much this year.
Woody Newton last night, in my opinion, did exactly what he needed to do as a freshman with low expectations, getting an opportunity. He's making Jim Boeheim make tough decisions. That was an impressive 15 minutes. The stat sheet, it doesn't pop, but in 15 minutes, pretty good. 9 points, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks, and 2 steals. He was active, and I want to boil it down to one play, because I think that's what really told me the most about Woody Newton. He hit a 3 right when he came in. And then the next possession down, Syracuse gets a stop. Ball comes back up. He gets another open look from the left wing, takes the shot, and chases after the rebound immediately as he releases it. He knows it's off, goes, grabs it, draws a foul on the way back up. And immediately I look over to the pseudo bench. It's not really a bench anymore. It's more like a folding chair section for Syracuse. And both GMAC and Adrian Autry are on their feet, clapping and screaming from that side of the court. I mean, that's just want to. That's just a desire to go after the basketball and play in the game. And there's two ways that freshmen get in Jim Boeheim run teams. I talked to Mike Waters about this. We talked to Mike Waters about this. It's defense and effort. And those usually go hand in hand. But rebounding, even on the offensive side, is another place where you show effort. And look, in 2020, not that many guys chase after their shots anymore. A lot of people want to hold the gooseneck up and watch it. And when Woody Newton ran after that three-pointer and got the foul on the second try, I think he put some permanent residency there in Jim Boeheim's brain now that this could be a guy. You know, not for a ton of minutes, I don't think. I want to preface, when Sidibe comes back, there's still not a lot of space. But he at least, with those 15 minutes, earned another 10 to 15 minutes, I think, versus Ryder. And what he does there could earn him 7-8 minutes per game this season. And as a freshman, that's all you can ask for sometimes.
Yeah, I think we were smiling in unison, you from the Dome, me from Ackerman Avenue, just a couple of streets away, and a handful of people, if not more than a handful of people, all throughout Central New York, GMAC on the bench, Autry on the bench. Everyone really loves to see that because, as you mentioned, it's not something that you see with all too much frequency anymore. Everyone wants to hold the follow through. Everyone wants to start to trot back and try and swag out a three. But you know what? Who cares if you look good if the ball doesn't go in? And he did that. He missed the shot and he followed it. He gets a rebound. He makes the most of that situation. It's exactly what you want to see. It's exactly what you look to build off of. And as you mentioned, it's exactly what is going to continue to get him minutes moving forward. He's earned himself a shot against Ryder to continue to get in there for 10 or 15 minutes. And what he does against Ryder will dictate what he does against Rutgers. If he plays against Rutgers, how much he plays against Rutgers, and it's going to continue to move like that going forward. He's put himself in a great spot, and he did exactly what he needed to do in his first game in Orange to say, hey, I know that maybe I wasn't supposed to be the guy coming into the season, but some things have shaken up. We've got a brand new look at things. Buddy Boeheim's out for a couple more games in theory. Barama Sidibe is out for 3 to 4 weeks. If all goes extremely well, it could be even more for all we know. I mean, he had surgery this week. You're saying he's guaranteed back on the court in 3 to 4 weeks? Maybe, but also maybe not. It's another one of those situations. You're going to have guys that are playing minutes that you didn't expect them to play at the start of the year. And you've got two guys that are in the same situation right now. It's Woody Newton and Robert Braswell. And Newton's taken advantage of the minutes. And Braswell has fallen short, and that's what's going to be the difference. I would expect Newton to get more minutes than Braswell against Ryder, and if that trend continues, which I don't see why it necessarily won't, I assume Braswell won't continue to be this cold, but if this trend continues, Woody Newton's going to be the guy that gets those minutes when I think Jim Boeheim went into two games ago, assuming that Braswell was going to be doing that exact role. And it's just, it goes to show that he came in, did what he needed to do. And when you make a play like that, when you're in high school, you get written down on clipboards. When you're in college, you start to get more minutes. And that's exactly what he did. We got a lot more to look into this weekend. It's an action-packed Syracuse day on Saturday. Notre Dame earlier in the day, Ryder at night to close things out. We'll have your coverage all day long on WAER.org or 88.3 FM, a WAER app. However you want to listen, we've got all the coverage for you. Ben and I will be firing off our thoughts all day long on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. While you're here, subscribe to the Twitter, subscribe to the podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, leave us a review, leave us a rating. We'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Tweet at us at Ostrom Avenue Pod. I want to respond. I want to do the research that you guys don't want to do. Ask me your questions going into a game. We'll figure it out. We'll give you our answers. We'll go back and forth with you. We'll have a little debate online. You can call us out for anything. I say Quincy's leaving next year. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm an idiot. I don't care. Tweet at us at Ostrom Avenue Pod. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week. Stay safe.